Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Veronica Roth's debut novel, Divergent, created a lot of buzz as she brought the reader into a dystopian world that was divided into five factions. The book left readers breathless as the battle for control began, and in her highly anticipated second part of the trilogy, Insurgent, we pick up from where the first left off. I spoke with Roth about the series and the process of plotting out all three novels.
Well, I had to outline the whole three books, but I did it pretty loosely so that I would have freedom to work with anything that kind of just came up as I was going. So I don't know, it's sort of hard to explain how it works. I just had an idea of where everything was going, and it sort of subdivided into three pieces very easily in my mind. So I'm very fortunate to have had that experience. I know it's more difficult sometimes. So it's just a combination of outlining and creativity, I think, to be flexible with the outline that you create.
I feel that the books are very cohesive in the sense that after I read Insurgent, I went back and read Divergent and then Insurgent again. And then I was thinking, there are so many wonderful little tidbits that progress the book along that come to light in the second book from the first. It just seems that you had such a wonderfully well thought out plan while writing that it could do that.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad it appears that way.
So Insurgent picks up right from the ending of Divergent. How do you know that you didn't want to skip time and begin it where the other ended?
Well, I tried skipping a couple weeks in the beginning of the second book, and it just didn't feel right to me. It felt like all of the momentum that I had built up at the end of the first book was lost. So I went back to the drawing board and started, you know, almost with the same moment that the first book ends on. And it felt like I was just hurling myself through the story. So I figured that would be a good environment to create for a reader, especially when I've sort of set up the expectation of a pretty fast-paced book, which I think it Divergent was most of the time. So my hope is that that continues with the second book and with the third book.
Well, it does. And just like Lauren Oliver, you leave extremely great cliffhangers at the end of your novels.
Oh, I hope they're not too frustrating.
No, it's brilliant. It leaves you clamoring for more. And then you want to go back and reread just to make sure you got everything. So to give our listeners some background, Chicago has been divided into five factions. And in the first book, we saw the lies of the abnegation, which are those who are selfless, and then the dauntless, who are the fearless ones. So our main character, Triss, is a transfer from abnegation to dauntless, and she's trying to come to terms with the surprise attack by Erudite, and they value learning above all, so that makes it even more startling to her.
Right. Well, it's what she learns, I think, in the second book, is that it's not the whole faction that's responsible for this horrible thing that happened at the end of the first book, that it's really a subset of that faction. And I think her understanding of just how nuanced these groups can be is much more complete in the second book.
The erudite leader, Janine, we see her at the end of book one as this, I mean, really ruthless woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, as you said, how the faction has been split, and it seems that all of the factions are beginning to splinter.
Yes. I think for me, it feels like the only natural thing for a group that has been so strong, like groups that have been so tight for so long, just it's impossible for people to stick together like that. So I guess that's my sort of dismal worldview leaking into the story. But just when something so traumatic happens, I think people tend to divide. And that's what we see in Insurgent.
And Triss, there's a part of her dauntless self that is paralyzed when it comes to shooting a gun. And we see her journey as a person kind of reverting back and having those roots of an abnegation faction member and then struggling with her dauntless self and then also the erudite self that she has within her.
Right. Well, I think one of her major emotional journeys or mental journeys, I guess, is to realize that in all of the people that she has sort of trained herself to hate, she actually can find a lot of similarity there. So I think it disturbs her to know that she could be like the erudite or that she could have so much of her origins inside of her still.
There's also another struggle going on between Tobias, or Four, as he's been christened in the Dauntless faction, that between he and his father and him struggling with his own identity as well.
Well, certain things come to light that really complicate that identity, I think. And I certainly see his relationship with his father undergoing some pretty drastic developments. So he just becomes more and more complicated in my mind, I guess.
There were parts in the book where I just wanted to say, oh, man, I don't like the direction that you're going down, Tobias. And then and then with Triss, she's a very strong female character. Was it important for you to have that vulnerability as well, for her to realize it and struggle within herself for that identity?
It's very important to me, and also to sort of honor the real people who undergo these difficult circumstances that she goes through in the first book. I didn't want her to just sort of bounce back like she's made of Teflon or something, because she's a person who lost everything almost. And I knew that she had to struggle with that in a really intense way in the second book, and I think she does. But she also becomes a little frustrating, I think, and slightly unlikable in the second book. But I've been around people who are grieving, though I haven't really done it myself. And I know that despite the sympathy that I have for them, I also find them sometimes too, they draw into themselves and they become unlikable sometimes. So I felt like a real way to develop her character.
I find that interesting, and I like how you have brought forth the other factions that we didn't see as much in the first book. And Candor, which is the one that always tells the truth, they give a truth serum to every single faction member when they're about to be initiated, and they just lay it all out on the table because they figure if everybody knows the worst part of you, then you're all on the same page.
Right, and sometimes I think we forget that other people struggle with the same things we do, or that they do think the bad things that we do, or do the bad things that we all do. So it creates kind of a common ground where no one feels better than anyone else, really, if everyone has to just rip their heart out in front of everyone. But I certainly wouldn't choose that life.
No. What has brought us to this point are the Divergent, and they are people that don't necessarily fit into a particular faction, though they are in a single one, but their minds really aren't wired the same way as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're being hunted.
Right. And I think the mystery of the Divergent is something that will remain consistent over the three books, hopefully. Well, definitely more will be revealed about them in the third book, but in the second book, I think it becomes clearer why they're in such danger.
Not until the very end, though, which I was like, oh, man.
Like, I can't give anything away, being very vague.
Well, there's the factionless. And the factionless are those, obviously, that do not belong to a specific faction for one reason or another. And they start to really become prominent characters within the second novel, whereas we only got glimpses of them or references to them in the first book.
Right. They sort of organize, which no one really saw coming. I think because the people in the factions have trained themselves to ignore these people who failed out of, you know, initiations or chose to leave their factions for various reasons, usually not reasons that people are proud of. And Triss has sort of trained herself to ignore them, and then they become very difficult to ignore. So I think a character at the end of the book, I don't want to give anything away, but I'll just say the quote that she says, it's sometimes the people that you oppress will become mightier than you'd like. And I think that's definitely what happens to the factionless. There's a lot of them, and they find each other. So
I think the factionless as well as the Divergents.
Right. There's these, I mean, in a society that's so defined by groups, it's sort of interesting that there are these other groups sort of welling up from beneath them that become just as important as the official standard government ordained five groups.
There's a character, and He's sort of like a minor, major character. He's there and he always pops up in the most interesting places, and that's Peter. And I find that he is the epitome of survival.
Right. He's only concerned with how to get Peter through life. He's not concerned with anything else. And he operates by these very strange rules, which I think, I mean, sort of bewilder everyone else. But to me, it actually kind of makes a lot of sense, which is why he's so kind of sinister in my mind.
In book one, you absolutely hate him. And then by the time we get about halfway through the second one, you realize that he's, in a way, the smartest one in terms of survival instincts.
Right.
And you would want to sort of be that person or have that drive as a person given the situations.
Right. Or really that you just can't blame him as much as you thought that you could, because he's just, I mean, while I do blame him still, I sort of understand him in a way that makes it difficult to hate him. So.
So we're heading into book three, and I know we really have been, we've been pretty vague, because I feel, and I would think that you agree with me, giving too much away, even from the first book, kind of just gives too much away.
Yeah.
In the sense of what happens as how the story progresses. But can you give our listeners any hints on how Triss might change as an individual once we see her in this final installment?
Well, I think she learns a lot. This is going to be hard. She learns a lot about her identity that will surprise, I think, everyone and her, definitely. And I think that changes the way she sees herself and the way she sees the world. And in one major way that I can be a little more specific about, it's, I think she starts to realize how young and very small she is. And not in the, like, helpless way, but just in the scope of the world kind of way, that sometimes people realize that they're just one little piece and they are a little less arrogant, I think. So I see that as the journey that she'll be taking. And I know it's a journey I took as a teenager, just realizing that I was a teenager and that I had a lot of growing to do. So hopefully that actually ends up happening, and I'm not saying that for no reason, because the third book is not done. So I could definitely see that happening. I think it starts in book two also.
The name of the book is Insurgent. It is the second in the Divergent trilogy. Veronica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Again, the name of Veronica Roth's book is Insurgent, the second in the Divergent trilogy. It is published by Katherine Teagan Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. What's your plan?